This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. While some neighborhoods in Cincinnati may lack access to healthy foods, there are various community-based efforts underway to overcome food deserts. The stores that do provide healthy food options set an example, and they bring change to communities in need. For example, the owner of Avondale Mart, Anthony Moore, was honored as the Uptown Community Champion of Avondale because of his store. And the Avondale Mart is part of the Center for Closing the Health Gap Healthy Corner Store Network. And here to talk about the changes happening at the neighborhood level and overcoming food deserts are Avondale Mart owner Anthony Moore, the Center for Closing the Health Gap COO Renee Mahaffey-Harris, and General Manager of Apple Street Market Cooperative Christopher DeAngelis. And you can be part of the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tony, Renee, and Christopher, thank you for joining me this afternoon. Much appreciated.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Renee, what are the challenges that we face as a community to overcoming food deserts?
Well, I first want to begin by kind of setting the record straight. In 2009, City Council appointed a task force to address food deserts, led by the Center for Closing the Health Gap, along with 13 other key stakeholders. We looked at the challenges and looked at best practices across the country on this serious issue, because in 2010, there were 1,400 diet-related diseases in the city of Cincinnati alone.
1,400?
1,400. And it was that data, along with a great deal of work by our task force, which was led at that time by Vice Mayor Crawley and subsequently followed by Councilmember Wendell Young, who has led the effort. We were able to have a grant be awarded to the center from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which enabled us to bring in the Food Trust out of Philadelphia to help us understand and draw awareness to this very serious issue of food deserts. We learned that in Cincinnati alone that we had 10 fewer stores than the national average, as defined by the Policy Link. And we created the need and demand for the city in particular to take leadership in addressing this very serious issue. And it resulted in food deserts being a priority issue for the budget and for a city council. That then evolved into us receiving a grant from American Heart Association with billboards across the city saying that we deserve grocery stores too. And that, again, as you were talking about, what is it going to take? It took the outcry of residents and other stakeholders to say we have a serious issue of lack of access to healthy foods that is resulting in lives shortened because of not having that access, not understanding how to easily be able to have food that then can convert into healthier food options for families so that they can lengthen their lifespan in our city. And so we're excited that we were able to work with many other stakeholders and led by City Council member Wendell Young in 2009-2010 and has continued to this date to address three core factors of access to healthy food, transportation barriers, and education about eating healthy. And so the two gentlemen that are joined here with me today, both are doing two different strategies. The Corner Store Network was one of the strategies, and access to healthy foods is the other strategy. And so I wanted to make sure I set the record straight and helped everyone understand that this issue of food deserts really did begin with City Council in 2009 appointing a task force that the Center for Closing the Health Gap worked with many other stakeholders to bring attention to this very serious issue.
It's a complicated issue.
It was
without a doubt.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's not an easily resolved one, but the efforts are being made, obviously. And Christopher, Renee's bringing up an interesting point here. You can build the access, you can put the stores in place, but then there's a lot beyond that, isn't there? I mean, you have to go out and educate people about the access, what's good food, what are good options, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely access is a start. But access is not enough. Education has to be a critical piece. And, you know, in our particular case for Apple Street Market, what we recognized is we put the store there, the access is there. But part of the issue is we've all been trained to some extent in the modern food economy of spending a lot of time in a chip aisle and the sugar bomb cereal aisle, if you will. And so we have to do a lot of education in store. And out of store. In our case, there's a number of educational programs. We're going to be putting in a kitchen classroom on the sales floor in the store. We're going to be doing a program called a 12 for 40 program, which is where you signpost in the store, basically all the ingredients needed to put a recipe together for 12 meals for two people for $40, which is roughly equivalent to what somebody using EBT would have a budget for. And there's a lot of other programs like that that we can partner with and that projects like ours can do.
Tony, how do you reach out to the community? How do you educate the folks?
I think that the fact that we are there and that when they come into a corner store, they do actually have an option for fruit or, you know, some sort of vegetable as opposed to just the chips and the drinks. We become that constant reminder every time they hit the door that they can have something other than the unhealthy choices that are always available.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Renee, tell us a little bit more about the Healthy Corner Stores Network.
So Tony was part of the pilot that was initially funded out of the Food Desert Focus in our city from Greater Cincinnati Foundation, and now Interact for Health has joined in supporting providing access to healthy foods, training to the store owners on how to manage that produce in the store, also nutrition education in the store. So there are taste testings. And at Tony's store in particular, there's a garden. There's a raised bed garden that's outside of the store that is managed by residents, kids, and adults in the neighborhood. So it takes that corner store, which there are corner stores in every neighborhood, but it allows the community to be a part of the solution by saying, hey, you know what? We want access to other healthier options. We want to be a part of helping you understand what our needs are and how you can provide them, and that we are going to then purchase those items because he is a business owner. And so it is important that the products and service products that are provided there are being purchased by residents in the community. And so I would imagine that what Tony has seen is, you know, in addition to purchasing soft drinks, people are also purchasing more water. They're purchasing 1% milk. They're purchasing other items that are healthier. And, you know, I commend Tony for joining in to the Corner Store Network, because there are many corner stores out there who they are not a part of the network. But he decided that he wanted to be a part of the solution in the Avondale neighborhood.
Yeah, how many stores do you have in the network? Right?
There are 13 stores in the network, and we are growing. So that participation in the network includes training to the store owner. We also provide an overhaul of the inside of the store. So that could mean that painting needs to happen, and that could mean that we put an awning up. And so in Tony's case, there's awning, there's signage, there's the garden. And so that investment that happens at each store really is co-created with our staff and the store owner, saying, you know, what are the things that are going to enhance that experience for the consumer coming into the store? And that's what the conversions are all about. So Tony can probably speak a little bit more to the conversion process, but I think that's an important element of the corner stores, is helping that store convert to a healthy space in the store for healthier products.
Well, what's that process been like, Tony?
Well, I would agree with Renee. Well, typically, we're not knowledgeable enough to get into the nooks and crannies of what creates a healthy environment for the consumer. But they've done enough research, and you know they're very willing to come in and make suggestions. Again, signage, and even in areas where you go down the aisle and see little signs that, you know, gives an indication of what's healthy, what's healthier, and what may be the healthiest. Things like that can help, especially the young consumer, the young mom, make healthier choices as they go through our store.
Mm-hmm. Christopher?
Well, you know, there's a couple things that they touched on that I think are also applicable when you're talking about the model of having a grocery store in a neighborhood. And that statistic that you pointed out about how few grocery stores or supermarkets there are in Cincinnati relative to other communities is telling. And that's a national trend that's been a challenge across the board. And a lot of that has to do with the expense of operating a grocery store in a low-income community. And when the organizers for Apple Street were looking at opening up a grocery store and dealing with the issue that Northside is a food desert because we lost our grocery store about 2 years ago, you know, there were a number of critical things that make it difficult to operate a grocery store. And if you can address those, you're fine. You need to be deeply connected to the community. You need to be reflecting what the community wants. You need to invest in extra training in your staff so that they know, first, they're giving good customer service, but they can talk about food choices. They're knowledgeable about the product that's being carried. You also have to subsidize the entry cost, because getting into the grocery industry is pretty expensive, and it's a low-margin industry. So if you can subsidize those initial costs, you can have a community-owned grocery. You can have a food source that's going on for 30, 40, 60 years. You know, once you get past that first hump of 5 to 10 years, failure actually looks like two generations, three generations of being open. Success means much more than that.
So in your particular case, well, why do you think this will be successful in Northside?
Well, in our case, we are a co-op. So we're community-owned, and we're worker-owned. So that addresses those two issues right off the bat. We're connected to the community. We are the community. We're going to be responsive by virtue of our structure. And being a worker-owned business as well, we're very invested in training our staff and having people be very, very well supported and knowing their industry. And there's a lot of information out there about how a worker-owned business, particularly with food cooperatives and grocery stores, there's a lot of self-education. There's a lot of investment in doing the best job that you can.
So you think the co-op model is a good model for addressing this?
Well, it's an old model. Co-ops have existed since before the United States existed. Ben Franklin founded the first co-op. And grocery stores, co-op grocery stores, particularly started in the 1840s, where trade unionists were organizing cooperatives. I think people are more familiar with co-ops. They think natural food stores. They think what's happened in the past 30 years. But they've also become a really powerful tool for addressing food deserts. Our sister co-op, a co-op that we've been inspired by, is the Renaissance Food Co-op in Greensboro, North Carolina. They're going to be opening up this year. They're in a food desert in a predominantly low-income community. And they're going to be opening up a 10,000-square-foot store. And they're going to be doing all the type, sorts of things I've been talking about.
513-419-7100 to join us. And let's talk with Sarah in Madisonville. Hi, Sarah.
Yeah, I just wanted your listeners to know about a unique community-based solution towards dealing with the food desert issue in Madisonville. And instead of waiting for a grocery store to come to the neighborhood, the community wondered if we could build 500 food-producing gardens in backyards, at daycare centers, at schools, and in businesses. And that program started in 2014 and has now built about 700 food-producing gardens, plus created a community-based farmers market. And then this year, the program expanded to include 500 chickens, and we have about 120 active chicken keepers, and local students build chicken coops for residents. So not only have these programs improved the access to healthy food, but they've also connected very diverse groups of residents in a unique way.
So you took things in your own hands then, it sounds like.
Yes.
Sarah, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
So I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit more about policy, and I think it's really the policies that are going to help address food deserts. You know, obviously we didn't get here overnight, and obviously when grocery stores start leaving our urban centers, which is what happened, was why we have food deserts. There used to be a proliferation of grocery stores throughout all of our neighborhoods, but as urban sprawl occurred, those stores closed. And when those stores closed, which were a staple in the community, then you saw the decline of that whole business district. And so, you know, in 2008, when Aldi's closed in Avondale, that's what created the urgency around food deserts. This was a neighborhood who had always had a grocery store. So when that store closed, and all of a sudden you had no access to grocery, and at the same time the pharmacy closed across the street in that same year before. Right. So all of a sudden you had this neighborhood that was the largest African American neighborhood in our city without a grocery store, without a pharmacy. And then if you look at the rates of poor health and the rates of diet-related deaths, you know, there's a strong correlation. So from a policy perspective, that's why I believe that the council appointed a task force, because this is an issue that is going to affect the lives of residents of our city. So I think to address it, we're going to all have to continue to work together and look at a variety of solutions.
No, it's not just health, too, as the first guest explained. There's an economic effect to all this as well. It's a job creator, and it has a ripple effect in the economy.
Exactly. Right.
The challenge with food deserts and addressing them is that they're a symptom of a much larger set of challenges that are being faced. And it's that we don't live, many of our communities are not what we call food secure communities, where we are not producing our own food, where the businesses that exist are not locally based. The big box model of retail, it works if you have access by car.
Right.
If you don't have access by car, it's inaccessible for you. In Northside, it's going to be a 2.5-hour bus ride, which is actually longer than it would take to actually walk to the nearest superstore. Right. And that's a real challenge. And when you have a corner store or a community-owned grocery store or a food co-op, they're working with local vendors. You're getting accounting services. You're working with local suppliers. And that is a multiplier effect that has been lost in the past few decades, too. So there's an economic development piece.
Well, the outcry of the community when the Kroger store closed in Roselawn and the residents received about a 5-day notification that store was closing. An outrage occurred in the neighborhood with folks coming to Woodward High School, over 500 residents coming and saying, this has got to stop. So, I think it's going to be policy. It's going to be residents saying, wait a minute, we live in this city. We pay taxes in the city. We are a part of the city and deserve to have grocery stores too. And I think that continued message and mobilization by residents, by other stakeholders to say, we want better for our city is what the issue of food deserts and why we're here. The co-op model is something that has been a response in Northside. Corner stores are a response in Avondale and many other neighborhoods. About 8 other neighborhoods have healthy corner stores in their neighborhood. But the community is going to continue to have to hold the elected officials and policymakers accountable for addressing this very serious issue that's affecting lives of our residents.
What do you think of the pilot program that the city has going?
I think
it's a good step.
I think every step is a good step. So I think that policies that are going to reinforce addressing this very serious issue must continue to happen. But what's important also is that the residents that are being impacted have an opportunity to gain resources to be a part of the solution as well.
Tony, is that part of the key to competing with the big box grocery stores? That you're part of the community. Is that a big thing?
Believe it or not, we look at our role as when it comes to things like healthy fruit and vegetables and what we're participating in this program. We know that we're not the answer. We know that we are just essentially a stopgap until we can, bring on the resources, till we can actually get a grocery store. Our role is not to compete with the big box stores. We don't even dream of that. We understand that when a customer comes in our store, they're looking for convenience. And if we have the opportunity to serve them something like fresh fruit and vegetables, that's a good thing. So on average, believe it or not, when a person comes into a corner store or a convenience store, they spend about 2 minutes to 3 minutes tops. Versus when you go into a big box store, Kroger's or, other bigger stores, you may spend a little bit more time. And, of course, time's important. And when you only want one or two items, we don't think that we're really competing. We're not trying to compete.
Michael in Springdale joins us now. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I was recently at the food co-op conference at Xavier University, and I never got to meet anyone from the Apple Street Market. But I myself have an organic superfoods company that supports local co-ops, and I was just wondering about how to get on the vendor list or where I could go for more information.
So how does Apple work with suppliers?
Yeah, so how that works right now is we're a little bit early into that game. When I came on board, we were thought that we were pretty close to starting construction. And when you're trying to start up a store like this in an area where we lost our community store, it was a Save-A-Lot, we did an initial assessment of how much we needed to invest in improving the space. The final bids came in. It's a bit more expensive. We're probably a year and a half out from starting construction. We're probably two and a half years out from opening. So I think there's a little bit of time yet to get on that vendor list. we got a little bit of time there. You can email me at GM for general manager at applestreetmarket.coop, Coop, co-op, and we can have that conversation.
How much of a difference do you feel this is going to make in your community?
Oh, I think it's going to make a massive difference. And, you know, what I have seen in other communities and working class communities I've lived in where there was a community owned grocery store, it definitely changes people's food habits. That multiplier effect of every time you're purchasing groceries in that store, that's money that's going into maybe the local accountant, the local paper supply supplier, and the way that that recirculates in the community and keeps wealth in the community. So it's going to have a fairly big impact in Northside. It's going to be an economic driver.
Yeah. And Tony, for Avondale, what do you think that your store has done?
Well, every little bit helps. And I think that's the ideal and the mindset that we have, is that if we can contribute something, it's still in the right direction, and it's certainly better than nothing.
Well, I want to commend Tony for stepping up in the neighborhood and saying, hey, I want to be a part of the solution. And what he's done is given a vehicle for residents to come together. The garden allows for young people to be a part of that store every day by maintaining that garden. And it really builds – neighborhoods are a community. They're relationships. And so as a corner store owner, he has decided that I want to be a part of the fiber of changing the condition of this neighborhood so that it can be a healthier community and that we can build a culture of healthier. So I think that's what the corner stores do. Again, they're not competing against a big box, but what they are doing is being a part of building that culture of health, because that's what it's going to take to really improve – all of our lives, is that every neighborhood, a neighborhood at a time, a block at a time, builds that culture of health so that it's about access, but it's also about the education, and it's also about building those relationships of community to all together be working towards the same goal, which is improving our overall culture of health.
I don't think your point could be emphasized enough.
And I think we should end there. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tony, Renee, and Christopher, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
The owner of Avondale Mart, Anthony Moore, the Center for Closing the Health Gap CEO, Renee Mahaffey-Harris, and the General Manager of Apple Street Market Cooperative, Christopher DeAngelis.